You are listening to a sermon by Cynthia and Ken Friesen, recorded on Sunday, July 14, 2024, at Point Grey Intermennonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speakers are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
Thank you, Janice. And thank you to everyone we've got friends and family who've come out today, and we're so grateful for you. But there were a lot of helping hands to pull this off because we're sharing slides and then we really wanted to be with you in person and not just sharing our screen from Zoom at home. So Rosie and Kevin have really stepped up and the scriptures are read so thoughtfully. So thank you, everybody. Ken is really good at not reading from his notes and speaking more directly to you. I will lean a bit more on my notes. Otherwise, I just get emotional and I ramble. So thanks. That's great. Oh, wow. Check that out. That's kind of fun. I'm like a emoji a little bit. We are very grateful for this opportunity to share some of the photographs, stories, and lessons from our recent Columbian learning tour. The seeds for this talk lie in a short email note I sent to about a dozen or so of you on our first day in Bogota, in which I wrote the following. As we sat and listened to the stories of several Venezuelan women today, who, along with their children, are finding a sense of dignity through the humanitarian and loving care they are receiving, I found myself holding a desire to simply let you know where we are and to invite you to journey in prayer with us. Several of you responded with a generous commitment to praying, and we felt your support throughout our tour. So as sojourners with us, it is our real honor to share more about our experiences with you today, and we're really glad you asked. This first photograph is of our British Columbian group with the MCC Columbia hosts and several of the Sembrandopaz team. We are in the dried up riverbed of the Pichilene Creek that runs through the Florida farming community. And I'm going to speak to some of what we learned with Etel Salas, one of the Sembrandopaz team, as our guide at those farming communities in my third vignette. But for now, let me simply say that we were able to see firsthand how MCC's local partner, Sembrandopaz, is living out its name, essentially a play on words, which translates as sowing seeds of peace.
Cynthia's going to talk about our trip to Columbia, and I'm going to talk more broadly about MCC and its offshoot, Highland. So first off, MCC, a lot of us are familiar with MCC, but some people aren't, especially younger people that have the idea that the churches are associated with a particular, our Mennonite churches are associated with a particular aid and development agency isn't known to most young people. So MCC is about 100 years old. It started in 1920. It started to respond to refugee crisis in Ukraine. And it was by Mennonites for Mennonites. And so it was only about 1940s, 1936 in particular, that we moved more from being just an organization that looked after our own to being more outward looking. MCC now is in more than 50 countries worldwide. And so we're over 100 years old, and part of what I'm going to talk about is to deal with the next 100 years. By way of background, and this begins the conversation about why my interest in Menno Hall, is that Cynthia and I applied and were accepted to work for MCC when we were first married, actually just before we got married, because part of the reason we got married was to go work off overseas together. That didn't work out for a variety of reasons. That narrative of working for MCC has been a continuous one. And I pivoted and have been working with MCC locally since a few years after that.
One moment, we have a feedback issue.
Of course you did. Feels so good to be supported by you all. We took our four children to Colombia, including little Josephine, for a few months 15 years ago, while my sister and her husband were both working in Bogota. We took a fresh approach to what we were learning as a family with every new morning. And several days were spent at a school on the outskirts of Bogota in the barrio of Soacha. We've got some pictures of Josephine and Isaac, like carrying sheets of metal and trying to help out as they were building this new roof at this school. And we were just there for a couple of days, but it was very formative for our family. That school is still there, and it's an MCC project that is supported by the Mennonite Brethren Conference. On this trip to Colombia in May, the MCC team took us to a second education and care project very close by to the other, which happens to be supported by the Mennonite Church Conference. Creciendo Juntas is an after-school care and weekend outreach endeavor for children and youth. And so we can go to the next photo and we can show our Highland team at the school. So Elias is the son of Aaron and Johan. He's kind of in that front row there. And front row. and Aaron and Johan are both MCC Columbia staff. So Elias came along that day. So you can see him here as we hold up the sign made for our visit. But we don't have any photographs of the sweet and beautiful children who greeted us that morning because we were asked to respect their need for safety and to keep them, just to keep them protected. These little ones know far too deeply how hard the world is, how violent it can be. Teaching them about another path, that there is another way, the educators and staff really embraced this calling with purpose. It was a very emotional and meaningful day. The children sang and performed a theatrical mime for us, navigating some of the tools that they were being given to face violent situations. And they were so proud to show us around a place where they are loved and valued. It was clear to us that this is a third place for them, where they are offered a sense of belonging. I was touched by their curiosity about us, and they rattled off questions that the translator just tried to keep up with. And at one point, we were each sharing our names. And when it came around to being Ken's turn, there was much laughter after several of the children burst out with delight. Como Barbie. They'd seen the Barbie movie. It's Ken and Barbie. And so, yeah, speaking one language with Barbie. We can go to the next slide, which is a map. And I just wanted to show you this map so that those of you who are not familiar with the country of Colombia would kind of just see where we were. So we spent some time obviously in Bogota, and then there are some yellow stars up closer to the top. Cartagena was our home base when we went into the Montes de Maria area, a rural area. Sincelejo is at the heart of the Montes de Maria area. So just so you kind of have a visual of where we were. And then this Creciendo Juntas is located in Soacha, which is to the southwest of Bogota. And it's a fairly large socioeconomically challenged barrio to the southwest of Bogota. So returning our attention there now, this next slide is the violence meter, which was displayed prominently in the largest room of the school. And you can read a little bit about the school's mission and what they're doing there. So this violence meter starts with bromas hirientas at the bottom, which are essentially hurtful jokes. So that is actually a type of violence on this meter. And it slides all the way up to sexual abuse at the top. These various kinds of violence were all addressed by the staff and by the teachers with such grace and tenderness. It was lovely to see the relationship that is there, and that these kids feel so safe and that they can trust the people who are taking them into that third space. So they receive nutrition, meals, sports, creative arts, and musical engagement. But there's also, very importantly, a weekly dialogue on conflict resolution, prevention of violence, and forced recruitment to armed conflict groups. Because even though Colombia has had a peace accord since about 2016, and then the FARC got on board in 2023, there are still many smaller armed conflict groups, and they come to the youth to try to in these somewhat compromised neighborhoods, and they try to recruit them to be a part of the armed conflict groups. So it's very much still a significant issue in Colombia.
Should note, Cynthia talked about working with the MB churches or the Mennonite churches. Colombia is unusual in that context. We mostly, MCC works with non-Mennonite agencies, or for instance, Syria, they're working with the Syrian Orthodox Church. They may be working with Muslim churches or the like, or non-denominational, non-religious institutions. It just so happens that Colombia has a lot large Mennonite Anabaptist context. So that's why they work a lot with them. So you heard the name Highland. This is a lot of people are from the Highland Board, and Highland is an offshoot of MCCBC. We started as MCC Legacy Trust, which is a real estate firm. There was a couple, Mary and Henry Rempel. They came out of Yarrow, but originally from Ukraine. And like so many stories out of the Ukraine, they felt a lot of positivity towards the MCC as a result of being helped, or at least their families being helped. They came as very young children. Henry was a psychologist. They met at UBC, Henry and Mary. He was a psychologist that worked with individuals with, like his brother. His brother suffered on the trip over from Ukraine, enlargement of the brain, and therefore was disabled in the as a result of that illness he had, and Henry grew up with this difficulty in his family and would not have friends over. He became a bit of an isolated individual, but he went into psychology. He's a very smart guy, and for some reason, well, when he was 20, he wanted his dad to go into real estate. He refused, so he went to UBC. Did psychology, but in his 50s, he turned his attention, he and his wife, who they had no children, to real estate. And he went up to Prince George, strangely. And at that point in the 80s, real estate was super cheap because the forestry business kind of collapsed. And so he bought things at high interest rates for nothing. And then he accumulated, just had a nose for it. And by the time he passed away, he had about $250 million in assets. And he gave them all to MCC on the condition that that we run that real estate world like he would for the benefit of MCC. And so my focus with MCC BC changed. And I jumped over and got involved on the real estate side and kind of did both. It is real estate law. It's always been an interest of mine. Currently, and the Mental Hall is a project of Highland, and Highland gets 87 apartments out of it. It's also funding the institutional space, at least putting out the capital for it, for the hope that it gets replaced. So just by way of background, when the Menno Simon Center group decided to purchase out there, we thought we were going to do a deal with the Lutherans. That fell apart. And fortunately, Highland was there to help us through, and it's been a great partnership. An unlikely turn of events, and like many things, it's turned out for the better. That we were working not with the Lutherans, but with Legacy. And Legacy looks after Highland looks after the interests of MCC, and part of the interest of MCC is the Peace and Development Program. And it's when we've had to go forward, we've had to go between three boards. We have to go through the Civic Center for Discipleship, i.e. the Menno Simon Center board. We've had to go through the Highland board to get approval. And we've had to go through the MCC BC board. So it's just a lot of board meetings and a lot of log rolling to get to where we are now.
Next slide, please. Holding the hand of this adorable little girl, Evangeline, was a very special moment for me. She was crawling on the table and gracing us with her beautiful smile, while her mother, Marielis, who is holding her here, and her auntie Yankelin shared their migration stories, along with gentle encouragement from Sandra, the other woman featured here, standing just over them. Sandra is the Tesakio Migrant Project Coordinator. So they have faced extraordinary hardship, these women. Marielis and her husband are finally settled in Bogota after emigrating first to Ecuador and then to Peru. Yankelin walked 15 days from Venezuela with her 7 children, one in need of surgery that she could not receive there. And the Tesakio Project is advocating for her on her behalf, and she's going to be able to have that surgery. Marielis's story is additionally poignant due to an infection she contracted while pregnant, which threatened her baby's development. Evangeline has needed medical care since birth, and the Migrant Project has walked this dark road with their family, offering them kindness, dignity, and safety. Their pilgrimage story is common to many migrant narratives, and it demonstrates how the project, supported very much so by MCC, comes alongside families in times of great vulnerability. Colombia as a country has committed to being a place of welcome for up to 3 million Venezuelans, and Tesakio is committed to supporting up to 500 of these migrants in the next 3 years. We again witnessed how practical care and access to resources fosters a sense of belonging for those in need.
Talk a little bit about the current challenges for MCC. As I indicated, we've really been in business for 100 years, but specifically since about the 1940s, 1950s. And since that time, the worldwide poverty rates have dropped. When people say that being in absolute poverty has dropped from about 80% of the population down to about 8%. So there's been some enormous success stories. But at the same time, the amount of refugees that we have a greater population, true, but the number of refugees and people that are displaced is enormous. Colombia being an example of that. When we were there 15 years ago, it was internal displacement. Now it's primary, there's still a lot of internal displacement, but primarily displacement from Venezuela. And there are about 7 million people that have been displaced from Venezuela in the context of Venezuelan political situation. This cuts close to home because our son-in-law is Venezuelan. His parents too came out of Venezuela when Claudio was 11. So Venezuela's loss. So at this point, there are about 120 million people that are displaced in the world. That's one in every 69 people. And so we started as a refugee organization for Mennonites, but the needs for refugee sort of placement and the other elements that come along with refugee, social and economic, they are not getting less. Cynthia's going to do another vignette, but one of the things that has kind of animated the mental health discussion has been the idea of what are we going to do for the next 100 years for MCC? It's just the confluence of the ability to have something like mental health and the financial resources to approach it, an idea of having an academic or think tank or place where practice meets thought has been a motivating factor in the creation of mental health. And it's something that's not new that arises at Highland, but has been something that in particular, I've been having discussions with the head of MCCBC, Wayne Bremner, for the last 25 years about. Many of you probably know Wayne Bremner, but since he took over as the executive director of MCCBC, it's been a bit of like a startup. And so it's been a bit of a ride for me to be on that board and to be helping. And again, it's been a bit of a ride to be on the Highland board. And we've gone from having about $250 million out of assets now to about $700 million in assets under management. So it's been quite an organization ride, and it may or may not be coming to an end. I'm ending my chairmanship at the end of this year.
You'll find another way to be involved. next slide, please. And hear you. You're going to see some people in these next few slides who are just resilient and innovative, and the kind of people I would love, if I have any sway, to come and speak, for instance, at Menno Hall and speak about their peace endeavors where they live, because they really do see peace as a tangible, practical thing that they need to approach in daily living and how they care for one another. So some of you may have read MCC's A Common Place, their spring and summer publication. It featured an article entitled Healing Land and Communities. The writer, Annelie Giesbrecht, touches on the diversification of field crops and the cultivating of peace in the Montes de Maria area. That's where we were visiting. You see here farmer Narciso Diaz, along with Oscar Torres of Sembrando Paz, and they are planting an eggplant seedling, and they're fertilizing it with an organic mixture. Their organic mixture had manure, rice husks, and river sand. And that's at the Finca Villa Santa Barbara, one of the three farms that we visited. We also spent an afternoon walking through the La Florida farming community, and we can go to the next slide so you can see Etel. Etel Silas, who leads the Economies for Good Living team at Sembrando Paz. So she's seen here giving us some insight into what they were growing. Etel also taught us of how in yams and yucas, mango and guava, the community is finding hope, and they're lifting their burden of heartbreak. We found ourselves holding both of these elements, hope and heartbreak, for those we met throughout our time in Colombia. And having Etel distill this balance act down to the crops that farmers are growing was really meaningful. Overlooking the beehives in this next slide, which is the Cel Cepuedes farm, I think we have to probably go one more. That's looking down at the water from Cel. There we go. Thank you. We listened to Andres Ruiz speak of how he has settled his family twice since the armed conflict of the early 2000s, and of the farm techniques they're now practicing in an effort to adapt to climate change. It was Andres who really asserted for us that one cannot have peace where there's hunger. His hope is that if the farm thrives, so will the younger generations of his family. So will they be able to avoid them being recruited to armed conflict groups. So will they be able to provide an education for their children. And his family, like the farm, will be able to flourish.
I'm just going to jump a little bit here. In May of 2023, the MCC kind of reevaluates exactly.
Our next slide.
Go for it. Thanks.
Reevaluates how and how they, what are the sort of philosophical underpinnings of what they are about? And I thought this, these statements kind of encapsulate both what MCC is about, its approach, and then the approach which we want to take in the institutional space at the Menno Hall. Peace is the purpose and goal of all MCC work. Their vision is rooted in Anabaptist convictions, envisioning communities worldwide in right relationship with God, one another, and creation. They work towards a world free of violence, recognizing that conflict can be transformed into peace. The commitment to peace is inspired by Jesus' teaching and expressed through scripture. MCC embraces a holistic vision of peace known as shalom, which encompasses health, healing, reconciliation, justice, and material well-being. They work for a justice-based peace, seeking to end direct violence and transform systems that cause indirect and structural violence. War and militarism are seen as contrary to God's vision of shalom. MCC supports non-resistance, advocates for an end to war and violent conflict, and promotes conscientious objection. We hope to have a peace and development program at Menno Hall. Given MCC's proclivity to strike committees, of course, we struck a committee. And the stakeholders, MCC, BC, the PCDA, and various academics have come together over the last 2 years and create priorities for Center of Peace and Development at Menno Hall. We came up with a number of them, and maybe some of you have seen some of them published. I'm just gonna center this talk on three aspects of the seven. Polarization. Increasingly, the public and private discourse on the issues of the day is entrenched in a polarizing worldviews that result in distorted representation of the issues, declining trust, and hostile reactionary exchanges. Rather than learning from other perspectives, finding common ground and solutions, fostering healthy dialogue and respect for diverse perspectives is critical. There's growing interest and need to develop expertise in facilitating healthy dialogue at the individual and public levels. I'd say that's local peace. Indigenous. Canada is among the countries with a colonial history in which settlers displaced and abused Indigenous people. With the Truth and Reconciliation Commission process in Canada, there's an increasing awareness of the need to address reconciliation. At the same time, solutions to address reconciliation are challenging. More needs to be done to address this at the public and private level. And urban. And I don't know if people have traveled to smaller towns lately, but you know, a lot of our work is in Prince George, and it's striking the downtown, how those downtowns have changed. After a period of urban rejuvenation through North America, there has been a significant urban decline. Many urban centers, such as Vancouver's downtown east side, are well-serviced but not succeeding. More programs for drug decriminalization are being put in place, struggling to foster harm reduction in a stronger community. How can urban life in large and small towns find its way? So there's a lot of work still going to be done in the next couple of years to bring Menno Hall to fruition, and specifically to develop the peace and development program to fruition. On a personal level, and to answer your question, Cynthia and I were very disappointed 30 years ago when we never got to go abroad. It was kind of maybe an idealistic vision of graduating from college and doing, you know, work abroad. It has a romantic sense to it, doesn't it? So, but obviously there were other things that took its place and that excite both of us and has, for me, been extremely fulfilling. And the journey continues. Thank you.
We can just show the final slide, please, of the Highland Group at the Sesiquitis Farm. It was stunningly beautiful, and I have to say that is not something I expected. I didn't know that it would be so beautiful. And the people are just resilient and innovative and committed to finding peace, making peace in their community. And so it was very, very inspiring. And we were very blessed to be able to go. So thank you for listening.